Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. More analysis of your Toronto Blue Jays and Major League Baseball. This is Baseball Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Takeaway from last night's game, the performance in particular. Well, there's a couple of things you got to say here, Kevin, before we deal with the whole blown play by the umpire, which let's just throw this out there. The Jays didn't lose because of an umpire's decision. All right. We'll deal with that later. But to me, the most important thing from this game, the far and away the most important thing from this game, was Matt Boyd's absolute inability to get anybody out in the first inning, his implosion. What did you see from Matt Boyd? I mean, we saw three solo home runs in his first start, and I think we understood what was going on there. But last night was different.
Well, it seems to me like he has a real tough time throwing a breaking ball. The breaking ball is not as sharp as I think we expected it to be. When you don't have secondary pitches, you don't throw very hard, and you're leaving balls up. You see the results. It's something that, you know, you hope that Matt Boyd can go down to AAA and figure it out. Figure things out. I'm not real sure this is going to be very easy. It's, you know, for young guys to come up and struggle and have a couple of bad games. You know, I don't know if the first game is we consider a bad game, but giving up three home runs because you leave the ball up, you know, there's something to that. There's something to coming to the big leagues and making good pitches, getting ahead of guys and putting guys away. That's, you know, the very first batter yesterday at 0-2, he flips him a hanging breaking ball. That's, you know, you'd rather him bounce something in front of the plate, maybe get a guy to get out in front and swing at a bad pitch. But, you know, you're facing in the Red Sox one of the worst teams at hitting lefties in baseball. I think they were 28th coming into yesterday. Obviously that's when that's went up a little bit, but you have to come in and make some better pitches, and you know, Matt Boyd didn't. That's bottom line. Is it's you hope that this doesn't destroy the kid, because it is going to be very hard mentally to go down and know that I've done really well in the minor leagues. I went to the big leagues and I'm having a real tough time getting guys out. How does he handle that? It's going to be interesting to watch that.
Matt Boyd, by the way, his line: 6 hits, 7 runs, 1 walk, 0 strikeouts, 0 innings. Did not retire anybody. The damage makers for the Boston Red Sox: Xander Bogaerts had an RBI single in the first, an RBI single in the seventh. David Ortiz had a 3-run homer in the first. Hanley Ramirez, a solo homer in the first. Alejandro Diaza, a 2-run triple in the first, an RBI double in the seventh, an RBI single in the eighth. Mookie Betts had an RBI single in the first, an RBI single in the seventh. Devin Travis had an RBI single in the second for the Blue Jays. Josh Donaldson walking the second. I mean, it was just a steaming pile of crap as a baseball game. Let's be honest. Guys forgetting, Steve Delabar forgetting the number outs. It was a horrible series.
It was.
I mean, it was just bad, bad, bad baseball, all told.
You saw guys, you know, not throwing guys out, from letting guys go second and third on pop-ups to center field. You saw the Red Sox missing pop-ups at first base.
It's like the Red Sox are a disease.
It is. To me, they look like a really bad team. And we can say it the way it is right now. Fundamental-wise, they're not a very good team. They're hard to watch.
Russ Martin got a solo homer. Danny Valencia, solo homer. This is one of those games where the Jays fell behind, came back, and left the bases loaded. I mean, it was a comeback that was there for the taking. And normally you'd expect this team to do that. But my God, Chris Colabello had just an awful night, at the plate in the clutch. And as I said, I mean, really, I don't know if a score can necessarily, if a 12-6 score can flatter the team that lost, but that really flattered the Blue Jays. 12-6 flattered the Blue Jays.
I just think it's very hard when you fall that far behind in the first inning and you know every pitch matters now. It's mm-hmm. you walk into the plate and you want to work counts and you want to take pitches and you want to get in good counts to hit when you're down 8-0. It's very hard to do that.
So the Jays get to turn the page, and boy, oh boy, they better do it quickly. They start a 3-game series against the Detroit Tigers tonight, the pitching matchup. They will see Anibal Sanchez, David Price, and Justin Verlander. The good news in this road trip coming up, and the Jays basically now are on the road for an eternity thanks to the Pan Am Games. The good news is that they're going to miss Chris Sale. He pitches Sunday for the White Sox, so they're going to miss Chris Sale when they go into Chicago. But the matchups in this series, Drew Hutchison and Anibal Sanchez, R.A. Dickey against David Price, Marco Estrada against Justin Verlander, those are the matchups for the three games coming in. The three games that the Jays will start tonight in Detroit. We'll be joined, by the way, by Tigers radio analyst Jim Price at 12:15. Ben Badler from Baseball America is going to join us later on in the show as well. We're going to talk about the signing of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to a almost $4 million contract by the Blue Jays yesterday. It's his signing as an international free agent. Oh, we got to talk about the play at the plate. I don't understand. Look, I'm going to throw this out there. Shai Davidi's got a terrific piece up on it on sportsnet.ca. And I read it twice. And I still don't understand what the hell happened. So I'm going to throw that out there. The play we're talking about is in the fifth inning. Danny Valencia going home. And, well... There you go. He's called out. Now,
I didn't realize you could block the play.
The first thing is I didn't realize you could block the play. And that ultimately John Gibbons gets thrown out after the play goes to review. John Gibbons gets thrown out. And ultimately, John Gibbons said his problem with the whole thing was that the plate was blocked. I mean, the rule itself essentially was that neither the tag was applied, nor was Valencia, did he get his hand on the plate in the umpires. Mm-hmm. If the umpire had made no call and basically said play is continuing,
right,
then it's a simple matter. Does Ryan Hannigan tag Danny Valencia before Valencia gets his hand on the plate? We mm-hmm. see that all the time. The umpire doesn't make a call. He stands back. Yeah. We see that happen. The problem is the umpire called him out. And that set into, you know, that set into, set a chain of events off. And I mean, the upshoot, the explanation we were given, and this is Jerry Davis, the home plate umpire, who, by the way, is, you know, not the mess that a lot of people have been trying to paint him out to be in Twitter. He's actually got a pretty decent reputation as an umpire. He talked about the second tag. This is Jerry Davis talking to a pool reporter after the game. The second tag, quote, negates that first call at all. If both the runner misses the plate and the tag is missed, if the umpire makes a call and the catcher appeals it before going to the headset, then he's called out. So Hannigan didn't appeal the play verbally, but Davis said, and this is a quote from the umpire, he just went over and tagged him, which is a form of appeal. Asked if that interpretation of the rules came from replay officials, Davis replied, correct. So now we can get into a whole the discussion about whether the plate was blocked. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the Blue Jays are saying that the regulation contradicts itself. And from Danny Valencia's point of view, there was no way for him to know that Jerry Davis felt he may have missed the plate. Once he saw the out signaled, he assumed his role in the play was dead. Now, you could sit there and say, all right, Danny Valencia should have still gone back and tagged the play. You know, the umpire's call was pretty clear.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of those things that you often see in baseball where you get this sort of conglomeration of bizarre events happening in one play. I think it gets back to, and I agree with John Gibbons in this, it gets back ultimately to whether or not the plate was blocked.
Right.
That seems to be John Gibbons' biggest beef with this. And if you go by the definition of the rules, to me it looked like he blocked the plate.
Did.
To me it looked like he blocked the plate.
I think Danny Valencia could have cured all of this. Slide right into the plate. Don't try to go around it. That's your plate. That's your area to slide to. Don't try to go around it and touch it when you slide by it. Don't do that. We were never taught that as players to do that.
But again, the rules have changed. And this is part of the problem, and I'm going to say this. This is part of the problem when you keep changing the rules in the game. And, baseball's a game of instincts in a lot of ways.
But wouldn't it have been easier for John Gibbons to come out and said he blocked the plate if Danny Valencia would have slid right into Hannigan's leg? Then he would have had a legitimate argue saying that he blocked the plate.
It would have.
Yeah.
And I don't know, having seen the replay, I don't know what type of guidance Danny Valencia was getting from the on-deck batter. I don't know if he was being motioned to slide around. I didn't see that. But again, the play, if the umpire doesn't call him out, it's just the play is just a continuation.
Yeah, I have another problem with this too. Whenever umpires make calls and you have instant replay and you it goes against whatever and a manager thinks that he's right, he should have the right to come out and ask why. Or have a conversation and get a little heated. Big moment in the game. I think it's part of it.
But you know what? A heated conversation, it's not going to change things.
Okay, it may not. But again,
I have no problem with John Gibbons being thrown out of the game.
I don't either. That's my point. I think if you're Jerry Davis, you have to know the situation. Know that that John Gibbons is going to come out and say, hey, whatever he says, I'm sure it wasn't nice, but
you know
the situation. Forget the rule is what it is.
You can't.
It gets
the
tired of seeing an umpire throwing a guy out just because he comes out and argues for his team.
I get more tired of seeing a guy come out and argue. I have never seen a rule overturned. I mean, I guess the theater of the manager coming out and arguing is fine, but to me, it's a colossal waste of time.
Actually, it's a big play of the game because it would have been a 3-run game instead of a 4-run game with 2 outs, 1 out, guys still on base. That's a big part of the game.
Yeah,
that would have been a big deal. A grand slam wins that game and doesn't tie.
By the way, this is from Mike Wilner. Felix Dubron has been called up by the Toronto Blue Jays. He could get the start in Chicago on July 7th. The Jays sent Matt Boyd down to AAA after the game yesterday. They also DFA'd Todd Redmond as well. So there you go. Felix Dubron, according to Mike Wilner, being called up probably to pitch on July 7th. I would imagine the Jays probably after that type of bullpen or that type of performance where they needed the bullpen a lot, you probably want to bring up another reliever for today too. I would imagine. But anyhow, there you go. Felix Dubron, according to Mike Wilner. And that's, by the way, from John Gibbons, who is just doing his weekly hit. Is it a weekly hit on MLB Radio? I think it alternates every now and then. But he just told MLB Radio that Felix Dubron will, in fact, be called up and that he will likely pitch. He will likely pitch on July 7th. And that is against the Chicago White Sox. So, again, a lot to talk about out of last night's game. We're going to have to disagree as to the importance of that play, Kevin, because I'm not going to say it wasn't important. First of all, I'm not a big believer in the theory of the predestined hit. I don't necessarily believe that what happened after an incident would have happened anyhow. But I will say this. When you give up that many runs in the first inning, you probably shouldn't be running around looking for reasons you lost the game. It's pretty apparent.
I just think there's a lot of bad things that are happening with instant replay, and I think it needs to be changed. And I think it starts a lot with umpires. I think umpires need to get a little bit of the chip off their shoulders and understand what's going on in the game and understand that managers are going to want to come out.
The chip on Jerry Davis's shoulder had nothing to do with that call. You're arguing whether or not John Gibbons should have been thrown out. To me, that's...
No. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, fine and Danny gets thrown out. But basically, he was thrown out the minute he stepped out of the dugout. I'm not buying that. I'm sorry. I think...
Why?
I just think John Gibbons felt like that Danny Valencia was safe.
Yeah.
He wants an explanation of why that is. Regardless of how heated it is or regardless of what the umpire thinks, that's the way it is. I guess a manager gets based on how many wins he has, and he wants to come out and know why it is that that run doesn't score and help my team win. That's what it is. And if he gets thrown out because of what he says, I'm sure it got – John Gibbons didn't start out with what he was saying. I'm sure that the – you know, it wasn't Sunday morning lunch and you're sitting around the Sunday table talking. I'm sure it's a little bit more heated than that. I'm just saying it's – you know, it gets old seeing – umpires throw a guy out as soon as he walks out just really? Because that's
I'll
the
tell
rule.
You what, I think
I get tired. You just get tired of seeing it. That's all.
I think it's a lot better than having umpires come out and arguing for 10 minutes and or managers coming out and arguing. Like I'm not.
Well, he
I'm
still argued for 5 or 7 whatever minutes it was, regardless of whether he got thrown out or not. So,
but by and large, you see less incidents of managers arguing with umpires.
And I also think they need to change the block and the plate rule. I get it. People are getting hurt, but it gets to this. It's if a runner's coming around, that's his plate, and you're not supposed to block it, get out of the way.
I'll tell you what, that rule's never changing. You don't change a rule like that and then change it back. You just don't. No sport does that. You don't change it.
Well, I'm just saying.
It's like it would be like the NHL suddenly deciding the headshots.
That's going to be that's going to be a shame. The seventh game of the World Series, and that's the way the World Series ends. That's going to be a shame. That's all I'm saying. Because it's going to happen sooner than later. It's going to happen in a super big spot, and then people are going to go, "Hey, why aren't we changing it?" Well, you know, whatever number game this is for the Blue Jays, what is it? It's the 80th game or whatever.
It was the 81st game.
Yeah, it's a. You know, that's a pretty big deal. What happens when it's the seventh game of the World? See, that's all I'm saying. Fine and dandy. It keeps people on the field, but it's part of baseball. That's, you know, runners have their way of running. If you're going to half do it, then half do it.
I think guys have pretty much acclimated themselves to the new rules.
It's the Ole kind of thing now where you see Danny Valencia swiping at it, sliding around the base. Well, if he slides right to the base and the rule's not the rule, he's probably safe. Unless that way John Gibbons can come out and say he blocked the plate, then they have a legitimate argue. Now it's sort of hard to argue that. That's all I'm saying.
That really was one of those plays that was just, that was screwed up from the get-go. That was screwed up because the umpire made a bad call, made the wrong call, and that started a whole chain of events. And whatever, we're not going to.
So we're both right.
No, I'm always right.
Yeah. All right.
The Toronto Blue Jays are in Detroit to start a 3-game series against the Tigers tonight. The Tigers are third in the American League Central, 6 back of Kansas City, 7th in the wild card, 39-39. And that means, of course, that Anibal Sanchez could take them back over 500 tonight. It is Anibal Sanchez on the mound for the Tigers. Drew Hutchison for the Blue Jays, who just gets tons and tons and tons of run support. He's 8-1 with an ERA of 4.99. Jim Price is the Detroit Tigers radio analyst. And Jim Price joins Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker on Baseball Central. Hello, Mr. Price. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you all doing? It's another beautiful day here. I live out in the suburbs, out in the country. It's beautiful. Mm.
Well, should be an interesting series. 3 good pitching matchups, I would think, for your guys, although Verlander. Justin Verlander's still Justin Verlander, and he does a pretty good job against the Blue Jays most of the time. How disappointed should we be in the Tigers right now, 39-39?
Well, I think everybody's disappointed and surprised of what our record is and how we played, and all, you know, our defense is terrific. You know, we have hiccups. We have a hard time getting rallies. You know what I mean? A good rally is some hits, a walk, an error. You know, we just don't sustain the offense and hit with men on base. And our bullpen started out not good, went through a good period. Now they've had some problems, and so forth. And it's disappointing. And, there's a lot of talent on this team. And they just need to they have to gel, and they need something really to, I don't know what it is, but to get them going and turn around. It's very surprising.
Jim, Anibal Sanchez is pitching tonight. You look at his stats, he's given up a lot of home runs. I saw he's given up 18. 20's the most he's given up. He gave that up in 2011 with Florida. What's going on with him?
Well, it's a surprise. I mean, last year he gave up 4 home runs, so figure that out. But listen, the art of pitching is good when he has his stuff. The home runs, they're hard to explain. I think he went through a period where he didn't use his fastball like he should, because it's a terrific fastball. He can touch 95. you know, and just didn't use it to set up his other pitches. And I think that was one of the reasons. And but then, he's had some good outings, some so-so outings. But he's a horse. We know what he can do. The home runs are surprising. And, of course, with Toronto coming in town, you know, just bat down the hatches, you know.
Hey, Jim, what exactly, and we're looking ahead now to Sunday start, where exactly, I should say, is Justin Verlander? And you've seen most of his games. Compare
every game, every throw he's ever thrown, I've seen it.
Yeah. Where's he at right now?
Well, I'd say he's a couple starts away from being Justin. He touched 96 his last time out. As an old catcher, I look for movement, what type of swings players have against him, how they read his pitches when they take a pitch. And he's pretty close, because the life on the fastball was good from 90, and mainly 92. But again, he went up when he wanted to. The curveball was sharp. So I look at arm speed, release point, and so forth. And I think he's very, very close. And, you know, he's got that inner thing about him that, you know, he was one of the best pitchers, and he wants to get back to that elite status. And I really think he can do it. He's in his 30s. But I'll say this, when he was Justin and he was touching 100 when he wanted to, he had no secondary pitches. They were all number one. I mean, that's how good he was. Mm-hmm. When he would throw the slab during that year, about perfect game, somebody got a walk, no hitter. I mean, that's how good he was. But I think he's a couple starts away from being what we think he can do.
Jim, when I think of Detroit on the offensive side of the ball, I think of Victor Martinez, Miguel Cabrera, but J.D. Martinez – I looked at that. He's has the fourth best on base percentage, plus slugging percentage, in the American League among outfielders. He's third in home runs. In June he had 11 home runs with almost 30 RBIs. Where would this team be without him?
You know, we got him for nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, we tried to get him from Houston a couple of years ago. They wouldn't let us get him. Then they released him and got him for nothing. And he's really been the catalyst all year. I mean, he has legitimate power. It's Miguel Cabrera power. And to right field, left center, it doesn't matter. And he's come up with big home runs, you know, to change the look of the game. When he hits the ball, it has a different sound. And, it's hard to say where we'd be, actually, because he's really been steady. Batting average is up to over 280 with that type of power. So, I mean, he's right now he's golden. And, you know, once in a while he may strike out, but when he gets his pitch, he usually doesn't miss it. And that's a great thing for a power hitter.
Jim Price is the Detroit Tigers radio analyst. He joins us on Baseball Central. This will be the first regular season meeting between these teams since the Anthony Gose and Devin Travis deal. We know how the deals turned out from the Jays' point of view. Devin Travis has been a revelation. And until he was hurt, you could make in some instances an argument that he was their most consistent player. I know Anthony Gose got off to a hot start, like Devin Travis. Probably not one of those starts you looked at it and said, this is great, not happening for the rest of the season. But where exactly is Anthony Gose's game right now?
Well, defensively, he's fantastic. But he needs to make some adjustments. Like you said, he started out really good. But then they get the book on you pretty quick up here. I can, attest that from my playing days. I think there's a lot of potential. Listen, this young man, with his speed, his arm, where he can play defense. But again, he's got to make some adjustments at the plate and not get himself down. I remember talking to him when he was with the Blue Jays. You know, what a terrific young man. And, you know, when you look at that trade, to think what Travis did, I mean, it's unbelievable. And but Anthony Gose's potential, I think, is very strong.
Jim, was great to join us today. It should be an interesting series.
Thanks, Jim.
This will be a lot of fun. Tie yourself down. All right, gang.
All righty. Take care. That is Jim Price, one of our favorites, Detroit Tigers radio analyst. And, yeah, he's right. He's actually seen all of Justin Verlander's pitches. Think about that.
That's a lot of pitches.
Yeah.
I think he's given up a lot of home runs. I think the mile-an-hour difference between the – I saw a little bit of his last start. He's throwing a little bit harder,
mm-hmm.
Verlander, so that may be helping. But – you know, again, it gets back to the older you get, you don't throw as hard. There's not that late life on all your pitches. And I think he relies a lot on getting ahead with the fastball and then putting people away with hard off-speed pitches. And I don't think it's there yet. I don't think it's back. And you see it struggling because he's having a tough time keeping it in the yard, too. He's given up four home runs since he's been back in three games. That's a lot for Justin Verlander. So You know, it's for the Blue Jays, you hope that trend keeps going. It keeps going in that direction.
Again, the Jays will start their three-game series against the Detroit Tigers tonight in Detroit. Blue Jay Central live at 6:30 with Campbell and Zahn. That'll be on Sportsnet Ontario. First pitch shortly after 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet Ontario. And Mike Wilner will take your calls after the game of the Blue Jays talk. Drew Hutchison against Anibal Sanchez tonight. Tomorrow, it's R.A. Dickey against David Price. That's 12:30 if you're going down to Detroit to see the game. Sunday's game is also scheduled for, I'm sorry, tomorrow's game is at 1, so is Sunday's game. Both those games are at 1 o'clock. Our radio and TV pregame will be on the air at 12:30 on both Sportsnet 590, The Fan of Sportsnet Ontario, as I said, Saturday and Sunday. First pitch after 1, R.A. Dickey against David Price on Saturday. Sunday's matchup, Marco Estrada looking to come off that, that unnerving start. Marco Estrada looking to come off his last start against Justin Verlander. Again, both of those games, both those afternoon games at 1 o'clock. You know by now that the Toronto Blue Jays signed Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to a $3.9 million international free agent contract. In order to get the deal done, they made a trade with the Los Angeles Dodgers to get roughly $1 million in international slot signing money. They ended up giving up Chase DeJong and Tim LoCastro in order to get that money. Ben Badler is the national writer for Baseball America. He is one of the foremost experts on the international free agent market. And Ben Badler will join us when Baseball Central continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Toronto Blue Jays have made it official. They have selected the contract of left-handed pitcher Felix Dubront and recalled right-handed pitcher Ryan Tapera from AAA Buffalo. That, of course, after Matt Boyd was sent down to Buffalo and Todd Redmond was DFA'd. So there you go. Felix Dubront, likely, according to our Mike Wilner, who was quoting John Gibbons, the manager of the Blue Jays, likely to pitch on July 7th against the Chicago White Sox. He's 1-3 with an ERA of 2.44 over 9 starts for the Buffalo Bisons. Buffalo not giving him much offensive support. He's allowed 36 hits over 48 innings. Opponents are hitting 205 against him. He is, of course, a veteran of 5 seasons with the Red Sox and Cubs. Had a 28-23 record and a 4.78 ERA in 102 games, 73 of those starts. Ryan Tapera will be back for the second time in 2015. He's got a 2.77 ERA in 13 innings. So, I mean, no real surprise the Jays needed to bring up another reliever considering the fact they dipped into their bullpen yesterday in the first inning. So there you go, Felix Dubront and Ryan Tapera both joining the Blue Jays today in Detroit, where the Jays start their three-game series against the Detroit Tigers tonight. Then they go on to play the Chicago White Sox. The Blue Jays signed Vladimir Guerrero Jr. yesterday, 16-year-old right-hand hitting outfielder slash first baseman, to an international free agent contract for $3.9 million. It's a huge financial commitment from the Blue Jays, but Vladimir Guerrero Jr., in most people's minds, was either the top-ranked international free agent or the very worst number two or number three. And there was a lot of bidding for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. The Jays had an allotment of $2.3 million in their international signing fund Teams are given an allotment of money with which they can sign international players. If you go over it, you essentially pay a fine and you lose the right, depending on how much you go over it, you lose the right to sign a player, an international player, to a contract of more than $300,000 for the next 2 years. So faced with that possibility, the Jays made a trade with the Los Angeles Dodgers. They sent Chase DeJong and a minor league infielder to the Los Angeles Dodgers for roughly $1 million of the Dodgers international signing money. You can move that money around. So that was the way the Jays got around it, and essentially limiting themselves to 1 year, a 1 year penalty as opposed to 2 years. Ben Badler is a national writer for Baseball America. You can follow him on Twitter at Ben Badler. He's been all over this story. And Ben Badler joins us on Baseball Central. Hello, Ben.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing well. Let me ask you, first of all, about I'd like you to explain a little bit, because you'll probably do a hell of a lot better job than I did. I'm still trying to figure out what happened at home plate in the fifth inning last night of the Jays game. But the whole concept, before we talk about Vladimir Guerrero Jr., of just needing to acquire that international signing money from the Dodgers. Why did the Blue Jays make that trade with the Dodgers, essentially for international signing money?
Yeah, so the explanation is it's probably going to be convoluted no matter who explains it, just because that's the system that MLB has in place for international signings. Every team has an international bonus pool, which is an amount of money they're allowed to spend on international players. And if you go over that amount of pool money, then you face penalties in terms of taxes and future signing restrictions. But you are allowed to trade for essentially other teams' pool money. So you can trade for up to 50% of your originally allocated pool. The Blue Jays had around, I believe, $2.53 million, I believe it was. So you can trade for up to an additional 50%. Of your original pool. So, you know, the Blue Jays wanted to sign Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He's definitely going to cost more than their original pool, but I think they wanted to see, you know, that they certainly had to pay him like one of the top players in the class. So, you know, we had him as the number one player on our board, and I know a lot of teams around the league had him as their number one player, or certainly among the top handful of players. So, they made the trade to acquire more pool money, and in doing so, like you said, they instead of having by staying within that 10-15% bracket over their new bonus pool with the additional slot values that they acquired, they're able to avoid the 2 years of penalties and not being able to sign any players for more than $300,000. So instead, they only face 1 year of that signing restriction.
Ben, is $3.9 million roughly what you thought Vladimir Guerrero Jr. would get? How do you go about judging how much is too much for an international free agent?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, a lot of these decisions on players are being made even the year and the summer before these players are signing. So I think teams are looking at, you know, what the market was last year and predicting some escalation in what it was going to be this year, because every year the prices on the international market seem to keep ticking up. And, you know, last year the top prices in the international market for the July 2nd kids was, you know, up $3.1 million. And it was pretty clear that this year the top guys were going to be getting about $4 million. So, I mean, you see the, you know, whether it's $3.9 million for Vladimir Guerrero or the Twins giving Dominican shortstop Wander Javier $4 million. The Phillies have an agreement with a big slugging Dominican outfielder slash probably first baseman Jalen Ortiz. You know, we'll see where that bonus shakes out, but that could also be another guy who ends up near $4 million. So I think the top of the class is getting paid $4 million type bonuses. So I think that does fit in with where these top guys in the class are getting paid.
Ben, do you see Vlad Guerrero Jr. moving from the outfield to first base, maybe because the book is. He's got a lot of power, but not a lot of speed, and he needs to work on his arm. Do you see him moving sooner than later?
You know, I think he's got a chance to stay in the outfield. I do. I know there. I mean, the risk is, like, he's, you know, premium bat, premium power. Certainly the risk is he doesn't bring much else to the table. He's not his dad. He's going to be flying around out there in right field and showing off an arm that's at the top of the scale. But I think he's got enough athleticism for his size to be able to play, whether it's, you know, left field or right field, if the arm strength improves. And obviously, you see someone who's, you know, just turned 16 years old a few months ago and is, you know, already 6'1", 210 pounds. You just project him to get even bigger. But I think a lot of his focus really has just been on hitting, and he's really good at that. I think if he you know, maintains his body and puts a little bit more time and energy into improving his defense, I think he does have a chance to stay in the outfield, but that is part of the risk. But I think the bat is going to be so good that I know even scouts that think he may end up at first base that don't really care, just because the bat is going to be able to play wherever he ends up in the field.
How much of a feeding frenzy was there for Vladimir Jr.? I mean, how many teams do you think were seriously in on him to the point where they were talking money?
I think there was definitely a lot of competition for him because, like, I mean, this is the son of Vladimir Guerrero Jr., or mm-hmm. the son of Vladimir Guerrero. Yeah, and this is not some under-the-radar guy. This is somebody, I remember seeing him when he was 14 years old at a showcase. He already stood out physically at that point. So everybody knew who this guy was. There's a lot of teams that had him really high on their list. I think it's just a matter of, you know, everybody has bonus pools that they have to stay within. So, you know, the Blue Jays are putting all their eggs in one basket. I know there were some other teams that were looking at trying to do the same. I know the Mets, from what I heard, were trying to spend all their pool money on him, but I think there were certainly some teams that were thinking about doing that, but just with the amount of money that it ended up costing to sign Guerrero, I think that took a lot of teams out of it, and other teams were saying, all right, well, you know, certainly we like him and we like the bat and the power a lot, but, you know, we're going to try to spread it out, spread our money out and get more depth of guys, whereas the Blue Jays said, look, this is a premium talent. This guy is worth it to spend all our money on pretty much just this one player.
Ben, it was great of you to join us today. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Ben.
Oh, thanks for having me on, guys.
It's Ben Badler. He's a national writer for Baseball America. You can follow him on Twitter at Ben Badler. So there you go. That's the
best
explanation.
Got a sweet swing. Yet. You see a swing on TV? It's good, man.
Yeah. 16-year-old kid, 210.
He's got a pretty good teacher, too, huh?
Yeah.
Not bad.
Not bad at all.
He's the best ball. His dad's the best bad ball hitter you've ever seen?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't even think anybody would be close to that.
Yeah.
I've never seen anybody hit balls that bounce in the dirt for doubles off the wall. And, I mean, I saw him do it once. And everybody's got a Vladimir Guerrero story about, you know, hitting home runs on balls that bounce in the dirt. Rondell White and Cliff Floyd. Actually, Cliffy spent some time with Rondell, or with Vladimir in the minors, and he's got more stories than a lot of people do.
I think his arm is a little bit more impressive from what I've heard. I understand the way he hits and what he hits, but him throwing guys out from the warning track or up against the fence at home plate,
yeah,
is
he? I mean, the only arm now. This is going to get me in trouble because there's been a lot of good right field arms. The best right field arms I've seen. And I saw a little bit of Roberto Clemente towards the end, just watching him on TV. Clemente, Dave Parker would probably mm-hmm. Dave Parker was a beast. I mean, he really was. Those would probably be the three best outfield arms. I know people are gonna. I Ellis Valentine's on that list. I just didn't see Ellis Valentine play that much at his height. But the three guys I saw, whose arms were that much of a weapon, were those three. The other guys I'd consider Jose Bautista a bit and Larry Walker. Larry Walker's the first guy I saw throw guys out of first base and singles to right. Yep. He did it. He did it like three or four times a year.
When I played against Vlad Guerrero, the book on him was throw him right down the middle. That was how to get him out. Don't throw it up or down or in or out. Throw it right down the middle.
No, throw it down the middle and let him.
He would take it because he's very surprised that somebody would throw it down the middle. So you just hopefully he'll be surprised three times.
Mickey Hatcher, the old Anaheim Angels hitting coach, used to say that Vladimir Guerrero at the plate, it was like watching someone play baseball with a tennis racket because he could get so much coverage, so many different areas.
He was a huge grunter. You knew when he was hitting, you could close your eyes and listen to him hit.
And the other thing that's actually kind of sad, it's kind of sad because injuries really robbed him of a lot of this. But as a young guy, he could flat out fly. Yeah. And he was kind of an interesting body type because he was all thighs. And, Vladimir Guerrero rounding third base on the way to home plate was a pretty fearsome sight. So anyhow, let's see if Vlad Jr. can pull it off. You know what time it is?
Batter up! It's time for Parker Goes Yard!
Now, talking about Montreal Expos and guys that I've covered, Pedro Martinez is one of my all-time favorite guys to cover. Chris Sale did something that puts him in the same class as Pedro, didn't he?
On Tuesday night, he became only the second guy in history. You just mentioned Pedro Martinez, a guy I never wanted to face. Fortunately, I never did. He was the second guy to strike out 10-plus in 8 straight games. Are you kidding me? 10-plus in 8 straight games. The only plus to that, you mentioned in the first of the show, the Blue Jays are missing him.
Yeah, that is good. They are missing
him. Got a hanging slider, high fly ball to deep right center field. I don't know if he got it all or not. Hayward going back, ball going, ball gone. That is a home run for Will Venable.
All right, let's talk about food. It's almost lunchtime anyhow. Let's talk about food. What are you going to be able to do at the All-Star game that you like?
Well, you know,
Cincinnati's a great food city.
Well, I bet you love great some food. Ballpark Franks, don't you? Some hot dogs.
Well, I like wieners.
I
like hot dogs.
At Great American Ballpark this year, at just a small touch of your smartphone. You know, you just, on your smartphone, you can actually order pizza at your seat. You don't have to get up.
Isn't that great?
Just order it on your smartphone. It's going to come right to your seat. You were talking about spoiled at an All-Star game. That's what you call that.
It's like, Minnesota has the kind of the beer dispensing.
I just can't get over the thought of you liking wieners.
What? I like hot dogs. I like me some mystery meat.
The high fly ball to left. Going back is Belt. He's looking up. It is up, up and away. Yeah. Jose has homered, and once again, welcome back, Jose.
Travis just said I faced Pedro. Something I tried to forget, I'm sure.
I was going to say, okay. I would think if you faced Pedro, you'd remember it.
Yeah.
One thing I do love. What?
You ever watched him on TV pitch?
Yeah.
Then you try to forget that.
Yeah. Now, one food stuff that I really like, and it was one of my favorite reasons to go to Philadelphia, were cheesesteaks. Used to get off the Expos charter and go right to Pat and Gino's and scarf down like a 1:30 a.m., 2 a.m. cheesesteak.
Well, the Brewers, that's funny you mention that, because the Brewers bullpen catcher, Marcus Hanel, broke a record for a 4-game series. Jeff, 4-game series. Mm-hmm. He ate 23 cheesesteaks. Imagine that, 23 cheesesteaks.
It's not that impressive.
You want to know what the record he broke? Whose record he broke? The Marlins pitcher, Matt Latos.
Well, that's no surprise if you've seen Matt Latos.
18 in a 4-game series. 23 cheesesteaks in 4 games.
That's 6 a day. And he spaced it out. That's doable.
No chance.
That's doable. Depends on how many onions you have on it. The onions are the things that sneak up.
If you've ever had one in Milwaukee, they cake the cheese on there. So you're having to eat a lot of cheese.
It's that nuclear cheese,
plus the big thing of bread. And the good luck.
And it's that nuclear cheese, the fake cheese stuff. Anyhow.
So 23 of them.
Justin Smoak turning around about right hand, and it's a first pitch deep to left field. Yes, he has done it. Both sides of the plate. There goes another one.
Woo-hoo. Justin Smoak going both sides of the plate. That's it for us today. Don't forget, Jays in Detroit, 3-game series starts tonight at 7 o'clock, 1 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. It's the time for the first pitch. Have a great weekend, everybody. If you're in the States, happy 4th.